In the last 100 years, it seemed that science and religion have split so far apart they'll never get back together. Those who ask if there is a God are told they must take it on faith. But a physics professor in New Orleans says he can prove it with a few not-so-simple equations. For more than 200 years, people who want to learn more about God have come here to the St. Louis Cathedral in Jackson Square. But in this new century, more than a few are going to the office of a physics professor at Tulane University.
Focus your attention up.
His name is Frank Tipler, and he is a respected theoretical physicist, best known for work on the theory of relativity, at least until he came out with this book 6 years ago, The Physics of Immortality. Tipler claims his equations prove God exists, a God he refers to as the Omega Points.
This is the physicist's way of representing the motion of time. Future is up, the past is down. The ultimate future is the Omega Point, so that is God.
Using widely accepted physics, now known as the standard theory, Tipler says that as our universe ages, humanity will expand across it with infinitely powerful machines and computers until the universe finally comes to an end at the Omega Point.
What is happening is the Omega Point, the very end of time, is not in time. It is outside of space-time and matter. It's not space-time and matter. You have to remember that in traditional theology, God is always claimed to be outside of time. He affects the world at all phases of its history. This is traditional theology.
Tipler views God through a scientist's eyes. Heaven, he says, will be an infinitely large computer in which we are all recreated down to the smallest level. A recreation so perfect, we will spring to life again.
When I went to Paris to see the Mona Lisa in the Louvre, and I saw some artists copying it. Now, it was not a perfect copy. It was better than the photograph. Suppose the artist gets better and better. Suppose the artist duplicates down to the last grain the identical canvas with all of its imperfections. Suppose every single defect, every single atom is the same in the copy as in the original. Now, if you duplicate it down to the quantum state, there is no difference.
So in the far future, you, I, everybody else is going to pop back into existence.
We will be not so much popped as brought back into existence by the intentional decision of the beings in the far future.
Tipler's heaven resembles the movie The Matrix. The characters live inside a computer yet feel they're having a physical existence. Once they learn their environment, they become superhuman, something Tipler says we already know the name of.
Angels are a type of intelligent life form, intermediate between God and man, and they had an elaborate hierarchy. The closer they are to God, the more intelligent, the more beautiful and so forth they become. That's the appropriate image to take as we go into the future.
This future existence, Tipler says, is trillions of years away, but we won't notice.
Once we die, we'll be non-existent. So the experience we will have between the time we die and the time we are brought back into existence is no experience at all. It'll be like a blink of an eye.
Close your eyes, wake up, you're there.
You're there.
Tipler says he's not trying to start a new religion. He only claims to be the first to see religion in today's advanced science.
I'm claiming, look, my fellow physicists, believe in the laws of physics, and this is what the universe has to be. I could also say to a religious person who takes the Bible literally, do that. Believe what God told Moses in Exodus 3:14. My name, said God to Moses, I shall be what I shall be. He's telling Moses, I'm the ultimate future Moses, believe it.
For those who'd like a fuller idea of his work, we have longer segments of this interview on our website. Go to mysanantonio.com and click on Special Reports. About another 8 minutes of the interview for you.
Very sharp guy.
He's very off.
Physics requires life to engulf the entire universe so that life in near the Omega Point will be omnipresent. The Omega Point, as I've already mentioned, is transcendent to time, beyond time, another property of God. Also, I've mentioned that in order to survive, life will have to increase its knowledge, with its knowledge becoming total, i.e. being omniscient at the end of time. Also, in order to survive, life will have to get control of more and more power, with its power use being literally infinite at the end of time. We could say at the end of time, life has become omnipotent. Life at the end of time, in other words, is transcendent to space-time, omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. It has all the crucial properties of God. Now remember, the universe is being guided into the Omega Point, so in a real sense, God is acting today, although in his essence, he's outside of time.
So outside of time, but he can still come around and...
He is, so to speak, it's very subtle, because it's working through the laws of physics. He is using the laws of physics, guiding the universe into himself.
This has been set up, these laws, these...
Yes. The universe, from the point of view of the Omega Point, has to exist, or rather, the universe is best thought of as flowing backwards into time from the Omega Point.
But you do not want a religion founded around your thinking.
No, I'm just a physicist. The essence of physics is to have public knowledge. I've not been hearing any voices. I'm not being given any revelation. All I'm doing is drawing
your money.
You got it. Don't spend your money. That all I'm doing is drawing the logical consequences of the laws of physics, which are on every physicist's bookshelf. Certainly have. I have a very minority of supporters in the physics community, but few. And a minority of supporters in the theologian community, but a few. Now, in physics, the game is elitist. That it's only what the big boys think. That's really ultimately important. That the big boys carry everybody else eventually. So I'm concentrating on persuading the big boys, which I think I can do because they know the laws of physics. Now, they know perfectly well that if you accept the laws of physics, you're going to end up with something like this. They don't like something like this, but I've got to persuade them to accept the laws of physics. They have plenty of previous cases in the 20th century that they ignore the laws of physics, the Big Bang Theory, the prediction of black holes and white dwarf upper bound to their masses. They rejected, physicists at the time rejected the laws of physics. They found out the laws of physics were right after all. So I think that given a few years of effort, I will be able to persuade my colleagues. Just increasing the power of the argument, eventually I'll become one on over. Without invent these laws of physics, they're in all the textbooks, just my colleagues are not yet willing to accept the consequences.
And you don't really think of this as a religious theory?
It's not a religious theory in this traditional sense of accepting things on the basis of authority. I accept things on the basis of experiment. That's the reason these laws of physics are in all the textbooks, because they've been confirmed by every experiment we've been able to do. And my claim is that a law of physics can be set aside only by an experiment, not because you happen to dislike the conclusions on theological grounds, which I fear is one of the main motivations of my colleagues, which are generally atheists. And they don't like a theory that leads us to believe inevitably that the universe has God at the ultimate end.
How many years in the future are we talking about?
Well, if you use human time, now remember, that's a weakness, using human time, because the real type of time you should use is measure time in terms of experiences, experiential time, subjective time, which is my unfortunate term in my book, but it's real physical time. There will be an infinity of experiences between now and the end of time, so in this more fundamental time, it's infinitely far away. But if you insist on using human time, then I can get from the physical laws upper bounds that this has to occur before 10 to the 64 power years have passed.
And we've gone about, what, 10 to the 10th or
something like that, 10 to the 10th. So we're very, very close down here to the beginning in human time.
So we're a long way from heaven.
You got it, you got it. But once we die, we'll be non-existent. So the experience we will have between the time we die and the time we're brought back into existence is no experience at all. It'll be like a blink of an eye.
Close your eyes, wake up, you're there.
You're there. That's how it'll appear to us. Of course, in universal time, trillions of years and more will have passed. But that's not the correct way to think about it. What you're interested in is from when you're talking about resurrection from your point of view. Now, the great physicist Isaac Newton said this is the way it is, and this is what Jesus himself said it would be, because when he was dying on the cross, Jesus was asked by one of the thieves who were being executed with him, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus replied, today you will be with me in paradise. Now, Newton was writing 500 years ago, 400 years ago, but at that time, 1,600 years had passed and more since the death of Jesus. And Newton said, well, that thief obviously is going to be disappointed because 1,600 years have passed and Jesus' kingdom has not come. Newton said that the way to think about it is when you're dead until God raises you up. That there's no experience between the instant of death and the instant of resurrection. For you, there is no time between those two events. And so it is correct what Jesus said to the thief, that today you will be with me in paradise. The thief will die, and the next instant he will be resurrected.
Does this mean someone like you would pray?
Well, you have to ask what prayer is. The meaning of prayer was, I think, fully elucidated by the first great Christian theologian, Origen, writing around 200 A.D. Now, he pointed out the following, that if you have God who is omniscient, he knows everything, you can't tell God anything. He already knows everything that you could possibly ask for, everything that you could possibly imagine. He knows everything you're going to say before you say it. You can't tell him anything. The only thing that you can pray, do in prayer, is to open yourself to a message from God. He can talk to you, but in a sense, you can't talk to him. He already knows what you're going to say. He's talking to you in the concept, in the process of prayer, if it's a real prayer. That was Origen's point. And as a consequence of this development, what prayer really is in the medieval Christian tradition, it's fallen out of favor now, but it's perfectly consistent with this view. When you're contemplating God, when you're trying to understand the nature of God, when you're thinking about God, you're effectively listening to God. So I'm praying right this instant. I am presenting the theory of the Omega Point. I am telling people about God. When I'm working on the theory in my office, working additional equations, trying to find, for example, an Omega Point metric that illustrates how an omega point space-time could even exist, I'm really praying.